This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is descended from Hollywood royalty. She's the daughter of one of the greatest and most influential actors, filmmakers, and writers of all time, the legendary Orson Welles. Of course, we all know Orson Welles was a genius simply by watching his monumentally significant movies, including Citizen Kane, The Magnificent Ambersons, The Stranger, The Lady from Shanghai, Macbeth, Othello, Touch of Evil, The Trial, and many more. His groundbreaking radio shows, especially War of the Worlds, were exceptionally innovative and still resonate with audiences today. And his renowned stage career includes many critically acclaimed productions, including Macbeth, Dr. Faustus, The Cradle Will Rock, Julius Caesar, King Lear, Native Son, Around the World, and Moby Dick, to name just a few. Our guest is Orson Welles' youngest daughter, Beatrice, who's had quite an extraordinary career herself. As a child actress, she worked with her father in his 1965 film, Chimes at Midnight, and in his 1972 film, Don Quixote, and in the 1964 TV series, In the Land of Don Quixote. And as an adult, she's been a highly successful fashion model, a radio and TV personality, as well as founder of a cosmetics line and designer of handbags and jewelry, in addition to being a well-known animal rights advocate. She also administers the estate of her beloved father, and over the years, she's worked tirelessly to celebrate, honor, and preserve and protect his phenomenal body of work and his legacy. In 1992, our guest received a special award from the National Board of Review for her work with my dear friend, producer Julian Schlossberg, in restoring her father's magnificent 1951 film, Othello. And more recently, she was the executive producer of Orson Welles' highly anticipated final feature film, The Other Side of the Wind, which was finally released on Netflix in 2018. And the next year, she facilitated the release of a terrific book entitled Orson Welles' Portfolio, Sketches and Drawings from the Welles Estate, which features some of Mr. Welles' artwork, including costume and set designs and caricatures. I'm delighted to welcome Beatrice Welles to our show. Beatrice, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. May I say something about the last thing you said? You mentioned the book, and I really think regarding my father's art, one of the best documentaries, if only probably the only good documentary that has ever been done on my father, is called The Eyes of Orson Welles, which was done by Mark Cousins. And it's all about his art, because my father wanted to be a painter. That's what he set out to be. And I think that's why, you know, when people watch these movies, they see such beauty. It's just, you know, it's like a painting. Many, many of the scenes are like a painting, and I think that's what's for. So I just wanted to mention that because it is such a great documentary, The Eyes of Orson Welles, because very little has been written, has been filmed that is correct about my father. Nobody has really understood my father ever.
Would you say, Beatrice, would it be fair to say that although you were Orson Welles' youngest child, you were the one out of his three children who was closest to him when you were growing up? Is that a fair comment?
Oh, my God, yes. My two half-sisters, unfortunately, Becky died. Rebecca, who was, you know, Rita's daughter, died in 2004. And Christopher, who was his firstborn, with Virginia Nicholson, is she's 20 years older than me, so she's got to be 90. God, how old we are. I didn't know them. I mean, they didn't interact in my childhood, and my mother and my father were married for 30 years. So it was like I was an only child, and that sounds awful to say that, but I really was the only child. I never went to school, because he traveled around the world and he wanted me with him. So I grew up I lived, I did everything with him and my mother. I mean, there was the three of us. It was, and when people ask me, well, what was it like? I said, well, I don't know. I have nothing to compare it to, so I have no idea. But so I was very, very close to him, very close to, too close to him in some ways, because it was so hard to lose him.
I read that if your father was ever having a bad day or was in a bad mood, they would bring you onto the set to cheer him up. Is that true?
I found that out from my Swiss nanny, who is still alive. She's 96, I think, living in Switzerland. I went to see her about, I think, 5 years ago. And she told me the story, and I didn't know. I mean, I was blown away by it. I mean, we were very close. My father and I were extremely close. I mean, we went everywhere together. We did everything together. I'd be, you know, but I had no idea that I had that kind of, you know, reaction, or that I made him feel better, you know. But yes, it's true, apparently. And that's from, you know, my nanny, who was with us for, you know, 7 years.
I mentioned in my introduction that you worked on several of your dad's productions. What was he like to work with?
Wow, he was kind. You know, everybody thinks of him as, you know, difficult to work with. And I think if you ask, well, unfortunately, most actors are dead now, but all the actors that worked with him said he was one of the kindest, you know, directors that ever worked with him, from Keith Baxter to Jean Moreau to Marlene Dietrich to, you know, I mean, they adored him. He was a very kind man. And he has this image. I don't know what kind of image he has. I'm still trying to figure out the image that people have of him. They
Well, do
have,
you want me to tell you the image
yes,
that I,
tell me. Yeah, the image.
as a fan who has studied his career and I've interviewed many people in the business, the image that he had was of a tortured soul, someone who appeared to be unhappy and frustrated with the industry and not really given the scope that he deserved to
Totally.
demonstrate the talent that he had.
Totally. Well, he said, I think, I don't know the exact words, but he said that he spent 20% of his life making, creating movies, and 80% of it hustling, which was trying to garner the money to make the movie, because most of his movies he did with his own money, and then he sold. I mean, I own nothing. Okay, everybody thinks, oh, the daughter of Orson Welles, you know, so rich. Oh, Citizen Kane. No. He left, you know, when he left, when he died. I mean, first of all, I had no idea that I was going to be the one in charge of his estate. I mean, nobody ever talked about it. I mean, I didn't even think about it. He was just my daddy, you know. But he owned nothing. He owned nothing. The only things that he did own were sort of like maybe half finished movies or whatever, you know, nothing. But
Why do you think that is, that a man that had so much success and was so revered and so beloved?
because that's Hollywood. No, it's not actually, sorry, and forgive us Americans, but it's a very American way where you think of someone so highly, and they can do no wrong, and you give them everything, and then suddenly they're too good, and they're too, and they say, okay, boom. And they've done this with lots of people, and I'm not talking about just the movie business, which I think is probably one of the toughest, hardest, most unforgiving businesses there are. But
It's
that's a
really
very
brutal.
It's brutal, but that this is the American way, is lift everybody up, and then, oh no, we don't like you that up, but boom, let's push you down. And that's what happened. You know, he when he came to Hollywood, he didn't come to Hollywood, he was called by Hollywood for 2 years after War of the Worlds. That's what, you know, the producers decided, oh, this is an interesting person. You know, he got the most incredible deal, contracts for Citizen Kane than anybody has ever had ever since, and probably ever will. He had complete control. He had seven contracts for Citizen Kane, where he had complete control over everything. Now, you give a 25, because he was 25 when he made Citizen Kane. God, can you imagine being 25 and making a movie like that? I mean,
It's hard
I
to
can't
imagine,
even.
actually. It's hard to
It
imagine anybody that age being so brilliant.
is. I know. It's to me, it's extraordinary because I think of when I was 25. I thought I had my stuff together, but I didn't. But he had, this amazing contracts, and they didn't like that. After that, they didn't like it. It was like, wait a minute, we're not going to let you know. You're not going to control us, because basically he was controlling the big producers. We're talking about, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, I mean, all those, Samuel Goldwyn. I mean, all those people that were incredible. I mean, they had control over everything. And suddenly he came in from New York, having made some extraordinary theater. And I think that's what people don't know. Well, there's a lot of things that people don't know about my father, but it's the theater that he did. In 1943, he did a Julius Caesar on stage as a fascist. I mean, this is just, it's during the war. It's during Mussolini and all that. I mean, he did as a fascist Julius Caesar. He did an all black Macbeth in 19, I think 40 or 41 or something like that.
Was totally unheard of.
In Harlem. Can you imagine anybody doing that?
No, he was clearly a genius and an incredible innovator. He was also an unbelievably good magician. I saw him on talk shows.
Oh,
Did he
he
used to
loved
dazzle
that. He
you?
loved that. Oh, yes. Oh, God. Oh, please, let's not talk about that.
Well, now your work
No,
as
no,
an
no, no, no. I'll tell you. Because he had this. No, he was a good magician. Yes. But there were days where, I'd wake up, and then at breakfast, there was a card that would show up on my underneath my cereal or my egg or whatever I was eating for breakfast that day. And all day long, that card would continue to reappear and reappear and reappear. And I would just go, oh, enough, stop. But
What a
he loved it.
guy.
He loved it.
I want to mention, Beatrice, your work as administrator of your father's estate. It's been incredibly important. I'm going to mention some of the highlights. In 1989, you successfully fought off an attempt by Turner Entertainment to turn Citizen Kane into a color movie. Was that a
Yes.
difficult battle to fight?
No, actually, it wasn't. It wasn't. And it was simply because of those seven contracts that he had with RKO, who was then bought out by MGM, who was then bought out by Turner. And Turner decided that movies should be colorized, or somebody did in his company. I don't know why. And just because of the contracts, when I heard about it, I went, my God, Citizen Kane in color. I mean, it's just like, I mean, movies are shot in black and white, or they're shot in color. There's a different way of making a movie. And I had no lawyer. I mean, really. I mean, my father had just died. Actually, it was earlier than that. It was 1987. And I had no lawyer. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. But when I heard that, I said, no. And I had a friend of mine who was a lawyer. And I said, can you write to them and say, hello? I think you should look at your contracts before you say, we can do this, blah, 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 blah. And waited 2 weeks, and then the next thing I know is that they're not going to colorize Citizen Kane.
Good for you. Good. And then in the early 90s, you worked with my dear friend Julian Schlossberg on the
Yes.
restoration of Othello, which
One of the
screened at the,
highlights of my life. Highlights of my
well,
life.
and what a movie. It screened at the Cannes Film Festival 40 years
Yes.
after the movie was first released.
And we got a 9-minute standing ovation.
Can you
on those.
imagine?
No,
Oh.
I can't. I still can't. I still think, my God, that was my life. You know, I did that. Well, I did. Julian did. But, you know, we did that, and we got a 9 minute standing ovation. It was just like I was crying.
No, I think that's so amazing. You've been such an incredible warrior for your dad. And I'm going to mention something that I know is going to upset you, but in 1992, your father's unfinished film, Don Quixote, was edited and released by Jesus Franco. Most people felt it was an abomination that your
It
father could
was.
never have approved of. That must have been heartbreaking for you.
It was. And in fact, I actually, poor Jesus Franco, I mean, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. Nobody knew what they were. My father made movies in the editing room anyway. Okay. I mean, that's where he made his movies. I mean, you know, that's what I can really remember. I don't remember. I mean, yes, I do remember being on sets. Of course I do, but the moviola, you know, which was the old machine where you cut and edited movies, was with us all the time. Wherever we traveled, there was a moviola. We lived in hotels most of the time. And I mean, there was always the one hotel room with a moviola in it. So for me, I learned how my father made movies through the editing room without realizing it. Because I was sitting on his knee while he was editing movies. And that was the thing, one of the many things about the movies that the unfinished movies, which I don't think there's any left now, unfortunately, that people have tried to finish and done the best they could. And yes, they're very good, but they're not Orson Welles movies.
But Touch of Evil, you were happy with the finished product, weren't you?
Well, yes and no, because it destroyed him. You know, it really, what people don't understand is that in 1952, you know, the rumblings started about, you know, Touch of Evil, and Chuck Heston, you know, was the one who had a moment. Surprised that Chuck Heston had a moment, but he did, of wanting my father to direct it. And you know, he directed it, and they took the picture away from him, and they didn't finish it. They decided to cut it all up and do it the way they wanted to. So did they finish it? Yes, they finished it in 19, whatever it was. What was it when we
Touch of Evil was in the late 90s.
late 90s, thank you. You know, yes, of course it's nice to see it, but he didn't edit it. They just got, it's not his movie. You
Well,
know,
it's
it's
the
never
closest we're
his
going to get,
movie.
but it is a good movie, I have to say.
It's an amazing movie.
It's a good movie. Now, the other side of the wind, I mean, look how many years you worked to complete and release that movie. Finally happened in 2018. But you said something very interesting. You said the movie was in the hands of people your father would have hated. What did you mean by that?
Well, it was in the hands of Hollywood.
Well, the Netflix people refused.
Well, no, originally, I kept Ted. No, not Ted, Santos, whatever his name is. The guy who runs Netflix is a big fan of my father's, a big admirer. And he really wanted to do it. But it just ended up, like everything does nowadays, in the hands of people who think they know what they're doing. And they don't. And I don't mean that they don't know their business. Of course, they're very good at what they do, but it's not my father. It's just not my father. It's just not at all.
Well, is there anyone today that could
No,
do the kind
of
of work
course
that your
not.
dad did?
No. I mean, there's a lot of people who are just as talented who can do all the things they want, but you cannot change. You cannot think that you can finish a movie by my father. You just cannot. I don't think you can do it with any great director.
Do you know why the Netflix people refused to let The Other Side of the Wind premiere at the Cannes Film Festival?
It was something to do with, I don't, you know, gosh, I should remember. It was only 7 years ago, 8 years ago. It was something to do with, because it was not cinema, Khan said, you know, da, 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 da. It was between Khan and Netflix because it wasn't in the movies. It was streaming or whatever. Now, thank God they've changed because, you know, life has changed. It is streaming nowadays. But that was, and it was a big pity because my father deserved that Khan.
Oh,
Because he's God.
absolutely.
He is God, Khan. Eh? I mean, a God. All my friends who go to Khan and come back to see her, especially, I heard, oh my God, your father, your father, your father. And I'm going, my God, you know, it's, you know, I'm going to be 70.
But your
You know,
father's timeless. He's a,
yes, he
he
is.
he's an
No, he was.
iconic, timeless legend. Now, you were in the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, made by Morgan Neville, which is all about the making of
But
The Other Side of the Wind.
I was barely in it.
Were you
I was.
happy with the documentary?
Do I really have to answer that?
Yeah, I didn't love it, so that's why I'm asking you.
No, well, it was about it, I tell you what it was. It was presented to me originally as the last 10 years of your father's life. And I thought, very interesting. Nobody has ever done that, blah, blah, blah. And then it just turned out to be, you know, a promotion for The Other Side of the Wind. I think Morgan is a great director. I really do. I admire him. It just, well, nobody gets him. Nobody gets him. That's why I want to do my documentary. I was
Well,
going to
that
write
was
him.
going to be my question. Why don't you do it?
Well, I'm thinking about it. It's, I listen, I, we, ah, so difficult to explain quickly and nicely.
It's just that you're
We were
probably
no.
the only person on this earth that really knew him well enough to do that.
Well, not only did I have that because we were so close, I was also my mother, who nobody ever talks about, which is to me extraordinary. They were married for almost 30 years. She was an enormous influence on him. I mean, when we stopped traveling and you know, he would go and he would call her once or twice. I was a child, well, a teenager, whatever. And they would talk for hours, hours on the phone. And I thought, wow, you know, God, they must be in love or something. No, they were talking about the movie. He was asking her opinion because he felt so strongly about that. And nobody ever talks about my mother. But my gift that I have to give as a person to make the documentary or to be involved in the documentary is that not only did I know him as a child, as a daughter, I knew him through my mother because my mother was my best friend. So my mother shared everything with me, everything. I know things about my father that no daughter would ever know.
So why haven't you written a book?
Because I've This is all very new to me, and I know I'm 70, but not yet, not yet, but
Well,
close.
it's just that your dad is
No,
the
Khan, we're
subject of.
private. We're very, very, very private people. Very private. That's why nobody knows. I mean, the only thing that people know about me is whenever I have to, you know, plug something about my father. I'm a very private person.
I
My mother,
understand that,
nobody.
but you
Yeah.
started the interview by saying that so few people really got
Yes,
who he
that's what,
was.
yeah. And that's why I want to do it. But
Good.
I don't want to do it because it's private. He's my father, he's my daddy, he is my mother, it was our life. But I realize that this is wrong because nobody has understood him, nobody knows him, nobody. It's extraordinary to me.
Now, I remember you saying in an interview that you're aware of at least three different endings for The Magnificent Ambersons. Do you have a favorite ending for the movie?
Well, I think the one that he wanted, which was, you know, the sad one.
Yeah, because there's the ending the studio did, and then there's two other scripts that you have.
Right.
So please, when you write your book or you do the documentary, please tell us what that ending would have been that he wanted.
Of course I will.
Do you have a
But it's,
favorite movie of your dad's?
oh, Probably Chimes, because not because I was in it, but because it was his favorite movie, and it was such a wonderful time. And we did it on stage. You know, we did it in Dublin first. I was 5 when I did it, and he loved that movie so much. Oh God, did he love that movie? And it was a wonderful time. It was a he was so happy. It was just everything about it was right, you know.
Well, I have to say, I'm happy to hear that because I watched him on every talk show whenever he was on, and he was on a lot of them. In fact, he was on Merv Griffin right before he died,
I
hours
know
before
the
he
night,
died.
but yes, the night before he
And
died.
he didn't seem happy to me. He seemed disappointed, a little bit jaded, a little bit
Very
cynical.
disappointed. I think he was just very disappointed, you
That's
know.
heartbreaking that a
Well,
person
he was,
brought
of
so much joy
course.
to the world.
Yeah, I know.
Now, in 2014, you decided to sell over 70 items from your father's career, documents, photographs, memorabilia, clothing.
Everything,
And then
everything.
in 2017, you donated an enormous amount of material, scripts,
Yeah.
correspondence, other documents to the University of
Well,
Michigan Library.
the reason is twofold. A, what am I going to do with it? I've had it forever. I have no children. There's nobody who wants to continue doing what I'm doing. To him, it meant nothing. I mean, awards were like.
But I don't think he cared about universities or libraries either.
He didn't either, I know. But I thought, you know, it should go either to people who really, you know, are fans or love whatever, have that chance, and then go somewhere where people can study him if they want to. I've always wanted to, well, I always wanted to, and I almost did open a museum. I wanted to do a museum of his in Spain. And actually, in the house where he, not the house, but the property where he was buried. And it was all going to happen. And it fell through because of money. It happened in 2008. Remember what happened in 2008 all over the world. So we had all this backing on that month. And then I thought, you know, maybe it was meant to be, because I knew at the bottom of my heart he would have hated it, hated it. So what I've always tried to do, and sometimes, you know, I interfere, I've always tried to think of what he would have done had he been in my place, what he would have wanted. And you know, a lot of it is we're similar, but there's a lot of things that are not. Like, you know, I would have liked to have done a museum. I really would have done. And when that fell through, I thought, well, it's not meant to be. That's not what he wanted. I know that's not what he wanted. I knew at the bottom of my heart that's not what he wanted. It's what I wanted.
Well, that counts too. Now, I have to tell you something that really touched me. I can't quite explain why. I'm getting choked up just thinking about it, but I read that you actually had some of your father's suits altered by a tailor so you could fit into them. And it brings tears to my eyes that you did that.
Oh, why? I of course, and I still wear, I till now, because that's summer, I wear a sweater that my mother knitted for him, and I had that taken in, and I wear it.
I think that's the most beautiful tribute that a daughter can have for her father, and I think he would love that you're doing that.
Well, that's what we were like, you know. It wasn't about awards. It wasn't about. It was, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I think you understand.
I do. And what I find so difficult is that this is a man who spent so much time hustling, trying to get financing, trying to work, and yet you've said on numerous occasions that he worked nonstop on that typewriter.
No, stop, no, stop. No. He didn't sleep. He didn't have, I'm going to bed, good night, daddy. But no, it was always like he would work all night, sleep during the day for a couple of hours, get up, you know. I mean, it was, yeah, no, he never stopped. He never stopped. There was always something on that typewriter.
There have been a lot of books written about your dad. Are there any that you would recommend to his fans?
No. As much as I love Simon, and I do, The fourth book, if he ever finishes it, I think will be the closest he's ever been to understanding my father, because I finally, he and I talked, and we had he's become a close friend. But he's written three books about him, and I've read the three books, and they're very good. He writes beautifully, but that's not my father at
Well,
all.
I know you're very, very angry about the Henry Jaglom book, My Lunches with
Oh
Orson.
my God, please let's not go there. Please let's not
Well,
go
I want
there.
people to know because we had Mr. Jaglom on our show, and he insisted that your father was aware that he was being tape recorded and that
No,
he
he
agreed to it.
wasn't.
But do you, could
No,
that possibly be true?
let me tell you something. I talked to my father the night before he died. He called me from the Merv Griffin show, which was unusual, not like my father at all. And he called me and he said, "God, I wish you were here. I do so much better when you're in the audience," because I used to do a lot of those things, and I was very touched by that. And we had talked about Henry and what he had done, and he was devastated by it. And then that night he said, "What do I do about Henry? What do I do about him?" Because he cared very much about Henry and loved him as a friend, but he was completely betrayed. And there was nothing worse for my father, and I'm very much alike, to be betrayed by a friend. There's just something devastating about that. What Henry says is wrong, and he should just fess up and just come on. He would never. My father, who was the most private person in the world, do you think he would have said all those things if he thought he was being taped?
It's hard to imagine he would have consented to being tape recorded with some of the things that he said because he was being very,
Exactly.
very candid. And
Exactly. Between a friend.
now, what about the movie Hopper Wells? That was a private conversation between your dad and Dennis Hopper in
Yes, yes.
1970. What do you think of that movie?
Well, I think they missed. I somehow, because I got to know Dennis years later. We were invited by the King of Morocco. This is for Othello. So that's a whole big story. Julian and I, and a whole bunch of us. And Dennis came as well, and I'd never met him before, and I got to know him, and we became friends. And he told me about this. He said he did this whole thing, at the, I think it was at the Beverly Hills Hotel, I'm not sure. He said, "I don't know whatever happened to it. I don't remember who has the property of it now." But I thought it missed out, because it missed out on Dennis's, Dennis was brilliant, in his crazy way. But he was a brilliant, he really was. I mean, he was an artist. And I just, it just didn't, to me, it just didn't click. Whereas they did in life, but somehow this documentary did. As I said, there's just not one thing that has been done about my father that I think is even close to what he was trying to do, or trying to say, or trying to be.
Your father's been exploited in so many ways. There's a 1993 documentary based on his unfinished film, It's All True. What did you think of that?
I walked out.
I don't blame you. I can't imagine any other person in your father's position having been so exploited so
I
many
know. And
times.
used, and and I know they meant well. This was, nothing is ever done in a malicious way. But It's All True was just, I went to the premiere in New York, I remember, and I sat there, and there was a scene in which he had, there was a Brazilian, I think he was cutting a palm or something, like that. And you could hear the samba, you could hear the Brazilian music in it as he was doing it. That wasn't the music they used. They use some sort of like orchestra. And I went, what is wrong with these people? Don't they understand what he was doing just there? And that's when I just said, I cannot sit through this. This is, well, same as Don Quixote. Don Quixote was the same. I could not do it. I wasn't going to do that to myself. I'm sorry. And I can't explain it to you, you see, because it's because I grew up with him. I was with him in the editing room, whatever it is. I can't explain to you. Somebody said, well, what would he have done here? I have no idea.
But you
I'm
know what
not
he wouldn't have
saying
done.
exactly. I just, that's the terror. That's the annoying thing, is I know exactly what he wouldn't have done, and that's that. But could I do? No, of course not.
Did your
No.
dad ever keep any kind of journal that you can rely
Oh
on?
my God, no. No.
There's no journals out there.
Oh my God, no, not him. No,
Well,
he
what about
was
his most important letters? He wrote a lot of letters.
a lot of letters to
Yes,
everybody.
so couldn't you put some of his most important letters into a book?
I don't have them. They're all over the place. Who knows where they are? He
Well, what
didn't
about the
leave anything.
correspondence
He
that you.
didn't leave anything. He
But
did.
the
The only
correspondence.
thing, yeah, no, okay. Any correspondence that I had was from the 30s and 40s that was between him and Data Bernstein. Data Bernstein was Dr. Maurice Bernstein, who was his
Guardian.
guardian, right, after his mother died and his father passed. That's it. That's all. And it's only there because Data saved it. If not, my God. Material, anything materialistic just gone, not met, didn't mean anything.
He didn't leave any screenplays that might be made into movies today.
God, no. Who knows? If he did, I don't know who has them, not me.
So before you.
I have tons of letters. I should have kept them, but I'm the same as my father.
Well, then the world is going to have to rely on your recollections, on your impressions. I mean, there's a lot of websites out there about your dad. One of them is wellsnet.com. Are you involved with that site?
No, not at all. No,
And there's a British website.
they're very good. They really keep up with everything that's going on, but no, I have nothing to do with it now.
What about the British website, orsonwelles.co.uk? Do you know about that one?
No, I must look that one up. Thank you. I
Do you
will.
have an official website for the Orson Welles estate?
No, I very much like my father. This is not, I tell you what, the only thing I have, and I wish I had done that sooner because it's just not in my brain. We have an in we and me have an Instagram account, which is Orson Welles Official. And I don't even know anything about social media. Can you imagine? So I started this thing and it's pathetic. I think he's got like 35,000 followers, but I started with zero, 6, 7 years ago. But it's today is social media. Had I been around somebody who said to me, your father didn't make TV movies. He doesn't, there's no reruns. He only made 13 movies. They're not, you should, to keep him alive, be in something like social media. Nobody ever said that to me. So then one day somebody talked about Instagram and I said, what is that? And they said it for me. And I thought, oh, maybe I should put my father on. And that's how it started. And I wish for him that I had known about it sooner, that I had realized how important it is, because that's what it is. I mean, today it is social media.
But
It really is.
it's really not too late, and you are on Instagram. And I get the feeling listening to you, Beatrice, you're a very intuitive person. You're very connected to your emotions in the way you
Very
live your
much so,
life, the way
yes.
you make important decisions. Did you inherit that from your mom or your dad?
I think my mother.
Was he an easy person to be married to, do you think?
Oh God, no. She was a saint. She was an absolute saint, but she wasn't.
Well,
They were both extraordinary people. They really were.
with all the mythology that surrounds your dad, not only in his career, but his personal life, what do you think is the most important thing the public needs to know if we want to truly understand who the real Orson Welles was?
That he was a real American in the old-fashioned word of American. He believed in his country. He was not, a flag waving patriot, but he was a real American. He was born in Kenosha. He moved to with Chicago when he was two. I don't know how you can be more American than that. He wrote, God, he wrote speeches for Roosevelt. He was a real American, a real American. And that's why it really annoys me when people say, oh, where was your father born? England. I said, no. He was an American. And he loved, because he went to Europe, everybody thought, oh, Matt, no, he's not American. He went to Europe because that's where they gave him the money to make movies. It's not because he wanted to leave America. No, he loved America.
I think
And
it's.
that is really, really the true American. You know what I mean? Of the old-fashioned word of American, which I don't even know if it exists anymore.
Well, I think that old-fashioned word connotes a kind of optimism, a kind of belief in goodness, in justice, in equality, in
Exactly,
that's
exactly.
what a true American has always stood for internationally.
Right, and the melting pot of everything. And my father, without a doubt, was the most unprejudiced man I've ever met my entire life or known. I just, when I moved to America, I was 20, 21. I remember just being so shocked by, the bigotry and the everything that existed in America that I had never been around ever in my entire life. It was shocking to me. And people don't know that about my father. They don't know he was an activist. He believed, and all that stuff. And it's like, that's why I say, in a way, he was the true American.
Do you think that if he were around today in the world of independent filmmaking, where the studios don't have all that control, would he have been happier nowadays than then?
I think so too, and I think he would have been very happy with all the technology. He would have been just like, it was like the big, he always called the movies the biggest toy train ever. Can you imagine today, what you can do? Oh my God, he just loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it.
Well, Beatrice, it's been a great honor meeting you and having this opportunity to celebrate your father's magnificent career, his body of work, his legacy. Thank you for everything you do to keep him alive. And thank you for taking the time to appear on our show.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely. Thank you so much.
Our guest has been the wonderful Beatrice Wells, daughter of the legendary Orson Welles. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Charalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV1 network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.